He looked at him and said, "I don't believe you just tried to kill me." And then he helped the cop out and left. And by this time, the cop was in his car. So it was really crazy.
We have the police's own gunshot report.
Yes.
That we are showing for our viewers and for listeners. You can go online at democracynow.org. It states one shot fired by officer.
Exactly.
Now,
and the DA saw this. The whole police department knew this.
But this didn't come up in the trial?
This was not presented by the state during the trial. But the state knew about it. So they tried to railroad my cousin. They tried to steal 38 years of his life. He's still in jail right now for robbing the officer of the gun that he wanted to kill him, that the officer wanted to kill him with. So there are appeals going on. The DA tried to get the first time this lawyer had ever seen that. This lawyer, Attorney Charnes, has been doing police brutality cases for 32 years, and the DA tried to get him thrown off the case, had a private session with the judge, tried to get him taken off the case for incompetence. First time that this has ever happened. The lawyer actually put this on the record in court and stayed on the case. But so the state gets to decide who gets to do the appeal for my cousin, and they don't want Attorney Charnes on there because he did a good job. And what's more, in the so many public defenders wouldn't take my cousin's case because it was publicized as a guy shoots a cop.
And though he was acquitted of this. And the police's own report said that the cop shot
they
himself.
Exactly. They knew from the get-go.
Let me ask you about your book, Tell Homeland Security, We Are the Bomb. What does it mean?
In one way, you could take it as braggadocio, right? That we are the bomb, like we're the good. But in reality, we are the weapon against the state. We are the weapon against the ruling class.
Can you perform a rap for us, the shorter one, as we have not a lot of time?
This one is from a song called Ghetto Blaster. It's a listen to the shotgun sonata from personas non grata with a plot to rock harder than the second intifada. I do drink fire water, but I'm more like higher water and will slaughter your armada. Inform your scholars that our alma mater squalor, so my squatter pull your collar at your black and white gala. With cannon fodder for dollars, both under Bush and Obama. I'm not a baller, I'm a brawler, calling y'all to come harder. I'm from the land of the free labor that planted the planet of black and branded to scram it over to Canada. A fan of radical bandits and bandanas who cram in the banana clip and rat-a-tat-tatted and they spat the grammar to scam y'all to clamor up the damn ladder to grab for Excalibur, not a rap battler, but the next caliber. Catch the program, not just my pentameter.
That's Boots Riley, American poet, rapper, songwriter, producer, screenwriter. We just have about 15 seconds. The importance of art in bringing that to your political activism.
Well, art are the words between the words. It unifies us. It allows us to know that other people are thinking the same thing we are. And it's part of an essential part of building a movement.
We're going to continue the conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Boots Riley, Tell Homeland Security, We're the Bomb. And that does it for our broadcast. A happy birthday to Julie Crosby and Vesta Goddars, and our condolences to John Randolph, our cameraman, whose mom died. That does it for our show. democracynow.org is our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, hello, and good evening. This is WUSB Stony Brook, where the time is approximately 6:02 p.m. Pardon the distraction here. We're getting everything on track for you, because up next is Off the Wall, a fantastic program here at 90.1 megahertz. 6:02 now, Off the Wall. Hello. Good evening. Is this working? Hello.
That's the symbol for turn the volume up more when I do that. We really have to have like a chorus and hand signals. Okay, yeah, because your volume was too low. You couldn't hear yourself.
Yeah, oh, well, anyway, we're here, and this is Off the Wall. And everything's fantastic here. We're probably one of the best talk programs on the air, and this is one of the best stations in the nation. So we're glad you joined us this evening.
Yes, and if you joined us by accident, too bad. You're here for the hour now, and we're not going to let you go until you hear what we have to say.
And you just got that bad news that you're listening to the best station in the nation.
Yes.
And the best talk program on this station.
Yes.
Welcome.
Welcome indeed. And Kyle, I got to congratulate you. Look at you. You, today you lost your cast. Well, you didn't lose it. You went and you had it taken off. For those of you following the saga, it was about 7 weeks ago that Kyle, after driving with me and a bunch of other people from Fairbanks, Alaska, all the way to Ontario with 34 sled dogs, the very, very last moment, literally, as he's pulling a futon out of the U-Haul truck so that we could go to sleep after doing all that, falls out of the back of the U-Haul truck and lands on his left hand and breaks it.
Soundly slapped it on the grass.
Yeah, making a snap that could be heard throughout the entire province. And we learned a lot about the Canadian healthcare system, and it actually is pretty damn good, I must say. But you wound up with a big white plaster cast that you've been sporting for the last 7 weeks. And, you know, we found out today, talking to a doctor, that it's unusual to have that. Apparently, And I guess this is why we don't see it in America, because nobody gets plaster casts in America anymore.
We have all the expensive stuff.
Well, I grew up with a lot of people getting plaster casts. People would sign casts. I guess you don't see that anymore. You see it in Canada. Almost everybody seems to have one. But here, what do people use instead? Or are we just not clumsy?
It's fiberglass.
It's fiberglass. What does fiberglass look like? Is it clear or what?
It's like a cross hatch, like a square crisscross stitch. But it's basically a fabric that has that kind of crisscross stitch, and then layers of that form a composite.
But what color is it?
It comes in a variety of colors, and that's one of the things. When you see all the different color casts, those are all the different shades of fiberglass.
So you can pick your own color.
You pick the color before they actually apply it, yeah, because it's a part of the actual fiberglass. But it's like a plastic. It's a fibrous synthetic material that is made into a fabric that then can be that reacts in an exothermic process and hardens and becomes a waterproof cast. Well, guess what? Back in the old days, it was plaster of Paris.
Yeah, and I like it because, you know, a lot of people were signing it.
Yeah. White. It's really white when it's new.
Well, it wasn't white anymore because everybody signed it. And it was basically like a graffiti wall.
It was.
And the thing is, people would stop you. Literally, strangers would stop you on the street demanding to know what happened to you. Because you look like something out of a movie.
You do look a bit of a caricature when you've got this heavy-duty first aid. It's really the conversation started, you know, 20 yards off when people spot you with this bright white cast. So anyway, yeah, that's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah, so 7 weeks ago this happened, and we were in Canada. We had to go to the hospital in Canada, actually get an ambulance ride.
First ambulance ride ever.
You've never been in an ambulance before, and I've been in an ambulance once. I was a guest, but in Canada, that's first time for me, and then we went to a Canadian hospital. I've actually been to a Canadian hospital before.
I was convinced they were going to drop me in the stretcher. It was really weird.
Well, yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But we got decent treatment.
Totally. No one there. It was really a low-key morning. I mean, they were really attentive and sympathetic, and gosh, if I had been really hurt, I have a feeling they would have been there for me in much the same way, with compassion and attention and everything I needed, regardless of whether I was a resident or a Southerner.
And you were a Southerner in the worst way, too, because people in the North, I'm talking about Nunavut and Northwest Territories, they refer to people from Whitehorse as Southerners, all right? And right. And people in Montreal forget it. So you can imagine what they refer to people in the States as.
Yeah.
So in our particular case, here we are in this hospital, and you know, we're from the States. Yeah, you have insurance from Washington State. You might as well have insurance from Mars. It does absolutely nothing up there. And not because of them, because your insurance just won't cover you anywhere outside of a small area, as mine does not either. And the thing is, even if your insurance did cover you, you still have that huge deductible that somehow we've all been saddled with since Obamacare started. I don't know if it's Obamacare.
It was there prior. But
was
yeah.
it? But it's just something that kind of snuck up on us all. Because I remember, you know, when people had health insurance before, they didn't have high deductibles. They had health insurance. They did, for the most part. Yeah, when I went to college, I just had health insurance. It wasn't that big a deal.
Well, my...
It got more and more expensive. They just keep raising the rates, and they keep raising the deductible. They say, okay, we're not going to raise the rates, but we are going to raise the deductible. And you think you're getting a good deal, but you're not. But the point is, you know, even if your insurance worked in Canada, you'd still have to pay because they wouldn't cover the deductible. So they're just not paying in a different way. That's all it is. So in any event, we thought we'd just bypass all of that. I mean, we're still going to submit the forms and all that, but it's going to be complete
nonsense.
It's
all after the fact. You have to pay as though you're not insured at all, and mm-hmm. and with the exchange rate, but it's about following up to pay down the deductible. That's, I guess, the strategy that we've been told, and is pretty much my only option to have any kind of reprieve. Therefore, you know, in the next billing cycle, maybe I'll have a low enough deductible that I'll get a taste of what healthcare is like. But, I mean, even $4,000 is high, and I had private insurance prior to this, and it was like $7,000 or $8,000.
We can talk numbers because yeah. you know we're not giving out any private information here.
I don't care.
What's your premium about?
Around $200, maybe $230.
Let's say it's $230.
Yeah.
All right, and your deductible is how much?
$4,000.
So 230 times 12. That's about I don't know $2,600 bucks or so. Plus, what'd you say, your 4,000?
Yeah.
So that's $6,600 a year you pay before they pay anything. Now, have you ever used $6,600 of health care in 1 year? And the thing is, when the year changes, it goes back to zero, you know? So it's not a good deal.
And that's out of pocket. So the one thing that came with the new plans was maybe a couple things where you can see your doctor, you get a health savings account, I believe mm-hmm. is what they call these kinds of things. And, you know, those options are nice and so on, but those don't do anything to pay down your deductible. So in a normal year, I might, you know, use my health savings, go a couple visits, get some checks, mm-hmm. you know, but and even lab tests being covered is a new thing too. So if I would have made those visits and then had labs, it would have been extra that I would have paid. But if I just was to do those visits, I'd just be working from a health savings account that would not be paying down the deductible. So in any given year, I never want to pay the deductible. I never want to pay anything for any kind of health care. So to think that that's like normal, that I would pay $4,000 just, you know, just to, as a maintenance fee for my health and well-being, it's not realistic. That's not what I do. I would use other options that are available to me before I would even go towards a deductible. And that's the thing about it. I mean, it's not a car. It's your body. It's a different kind of insurance.
It really is. And, you know, I think we just had to fundamentally change the way that we deal with it. I mean, when I if I'm going to pay that amount, and I pay a lot more than you do for health insurance, and I get about the same. It's just that number is even higher for me before they pay anything. If I'm going to pay that amount for health insurance, I want the insurance. I don't want a deductible. I want them to cover 100% of whatever it is that I'm insuring. That's the point of insurance.
Yeah.
And we seem to be in this mindset where, okay, yeah, we know you can't pay everything, so you know what? We'll pay you all this money, we'll pay the copay and all that, and then we'll pay a percentage of what you are supposed to cover after that as well. You know what? Why don't we just pay the whole thing and we'll give you money? It's like I feel like charity for the insurance companies. That's what I feel like we're doing in this country.
Yeah, and those couple times I get to talk to a doctor a year, he has, what, 15 minutes to talk about everything I might be concerned about that may have happened in that year or the past couple years or since I last visited. And he has no time to actually go into any of those things in any great detail. So what kind of characterization, what kind of picture as a patient are they building of you? You know, you occasionally go and spend money in their system, but the average person wants to talk about these things and maybe get the have the whole picture assessed, not just go and put money into the system in various ways and then glean maybe my health and well-being from where I'm spending my money in their system. I think that's silly, and I would rather the airtime with the doctors, but you just can't even get in.
Anyway, the way we left it up there, the doctor just came to us and said, hey, you know, if you pay me cash now, I'll give you a discounted rate, $150, you know, Canadian. It seemed like a fair deal because he was giving you a lot of attention. And when you added that $150 up to what the hospital charged you for the ambulance ride, for the bandaging, for the painkillers, for the attention and the ER, the whole thing came to about $550 US, which is really amazing for that. And you've had this cast on, which was only supposed to last a week, but it's been on for 7 weeks. I don't know. I think it was very straightforward. And even though we weren't covered by Canadian healthcare, I feel like we got a pretty fair deal up there.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't have been – well, I mean, I probably would have gotten on top of it wherever it was regardless. But all those things – I had to go through that process and get the attention right away because you don't want to ignore a bad injury, of course, you know, when you're hurt. And so I think we did it right in the situation. And perhaps it – was taken care of quicker because I would have had to navigate the whole American system.
Yes.
And probably would have put off a lot more down here.
There would have been a lot longer discussions and all kinds of forms to fill out. You know, basically, we felt it was time after 7 weeks to get the thing taken off, you know, as far as 7 weeks having gone by. Did you have something to add? Did you have something to add? I'm sorry, I fell out of my pocket.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the one thing we were missing in our plans that I think is above and beyond just regular insuring is the ability to go outside of these little cliques that carriers have, and then also international. I mean, for people like us that travel around the world, it doesn't really make sense to just have insurance with the local geezer home and you know, some walk-in clinic, and that's, you know, wherever you're covered, and maybe you get your teeth cleaned down at the spray and wash or something. But, like, you know, you need coverage in multiple places, and you need to know that if you're on an iceberg somewhere that you can get an airlift and you'll maybe get a decent deal on that helicopter ride, or at least a fighting chance at paying less than the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like there has to be some other ideas out there. So, hey, if you've got great ideas and have had a lot of success with particular plans or a particular country's system, or you think there's something on the horizon for our system that we could add or subtract from what we currently have, please let us know, otw@2600.com.
Anyway, you got the thing taken off today.
Yes.
Yesterday, we just went to a couple of orthopedic places in the area. First one we went to, they wouldn't do anything without your health insurance card. This is how bureaucratic we are here. They said, yeah, you have all your numbers, you have your name, you have all that information, but you need the actual card. Even though we know they're not going to cover it because you're out of your state, and even if they did cover it, you wouldn't meet the deductible. So why in God's name can't they just take the numbers, or not, maybe not even take the numbers, just take you and take the cast off? That's all we were asking for. Wouldn't do it. But fortunately, literally down the road was another place affiliated with this university, which was terrific. They scheduled you for today, and they just basically took care of the whole thing, and there's follow-ups and all that sort of thing. So I'm very happy about that. And they're offering financial aid, which will cut like 70 or 90% off. And so sometimes the system does work if you talk to the right people.
Yeah, and that was impressive.
Yeah.
And
so congratulations. You have an actual hand again. How does it feel?
It feels really strange.
It looked pretty disgusting when I took the cast off.
Yeah, it was so gross. I took some pictures, but I don't think I'm going to share them with anyone. but it feels really good. Sensation's really cool. Like petting animals, like cats and dogs. The fur, the tactile sensation, when you haven't had any kind of sensation in like your hand, which is pretty nerve packed, it feels really amazing to like have textures and that kind of sensation again when you've been away from it for so long. So that was cool. And I had some, I had dogs, you know, helping me out, clean, licking my hands and stuff. Probably, probably not the best thing, but it felt good to wash up and just the sensation of putting your hands together to wash your hands.
Yes.
Like I can't, you need, it's, I got really good at washing my hands, my hand with one hand. Which is really tricky, if you know. I mean, first you have to stop
and
up
you
the
can't
sink.
Get the cast wet either.
Yeah, you can't get this. Yeah, so you have to put soap on your hand, then kind of work it around with one hand, and then get the warm water, and then stop up the sink, and then kind of like make a little bird bath for your hand and like shake it around like your hand is a piece of laundry or you're cleaning a sock in the sink. I don't know. It's a ridiculous thing you had to do.
Right.
But that feeling of two hands, like being able to put your clasp your hands together, and it's a really amazing feeling. And something you take for granted, and I think that I've now kind of I appreciate a lot. I've rekindled that relationship with my other phalanges and appendages. So yeah, I feel all kinds of sensations. I cannot hold a pen.
You're holding a pen right now as you say that.
Yeah, well, I can hold one, but I can't really write with it.
Okay,
I can hold it and it looks proper, but it is.
You can't write is what you're saying.
I tried to sign something earlier. I couldn't do it. So writing is still out, and other dexterity. Anyway, we could go on and on and on and on.
Well, we're going to keep checking in week after week and make sure that you know you're slowly getting all your abilities back. We looked at the X-ray. You can still see the break, but it's much better. They say though that caffeine slows it down. We didn't know that. We've been drinking caffeine like maniacs. I didn't know that.
The first couple weeks we knew that, but then we just sort of
forgot.
I don't know if we forgot. We backed off. I think they might have told us when we were in Canada, and we did stay away. I mean, I wasn't doing a lot of. I mean, I maybe had a little bit of stuff to drink every now and then, but I was very careful because we were also taking anti-inflammatories and stuff. So, or I was, not we.
yes, it's only so far I'll go along with this.
No. But yeah, it's going to get better, I think, and we'll see. I think I'll just hydrate really well and be good to myself and for the next couple weeks now that it's exposed and I can work on dexterity and grip. I'm a little worried about handlebars on bicycles.
Well, I wouldn't maybe dive into that right away.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that right away. I don't think I'm going to be able to get on the tall bike like tomorrow.
No, probably not. But it looks good. Looks a lot better than it did when they took it off. I'll say that.
Thanks. Yeah, it cleans up.
It was pretty ripe too when they opened that thing, man. The whole room had to be evacuated.
Yeah, I like to be clean. And
but the doctor had. He was like he never saw a plaster cast before. That was what was so weird.
Oh yeah, the tech in the casting room was freaking out. He's like, he didn't know what to do.
It's like you're a time traveler from the 1960s.
He had to go get another pair of scissors. He was worried. He used the saw. He sawed it and he cut it with the saw in several places. Then got some scissors. Then he needed tougher scissors, like EMT scissors, and it just was a whole thing.
Wow. Well. Okay, I'm just glad we're at that stage now. I was getting used to you walking around with a cast all the time.
I have traded the comfort of the cocoon that was the plaster cast, and I have new issues now. It's going to be new challenges, and I shall report back, but I am going to use exercise and stress things and get myself all the way rehabilitated.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do we have for the people?
Okay, first an important announcement, and okay. I've already gotten three texts about this since we started, and I see this people in the conference room, and it's not broken. We're not doing it anymore. There's been a regime change here. The school has started. Do you know that? All the students are out. You saw them, right?
I thought I saw some people wandering around campus.
Well, we were waiting 45 minutes online at the coffee shop. That might have gotten your attention, too.
Yeah, it was out in the stairwell.
All those people are new people here that are going to school now getting educated.
There's people camped out for the coffee shop tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a different line. But in any event, since last week, we've had and I kind of like that about this place.
We haven't talked about this, have
no,
we?
No, we haven't. Wow. You were supposed to read about it. You know, basically, you know, as in politics, things change. Here, things change semester to semester. So yes. What we were required to do last week insofar as the machine and the week before that, now we are forbidden from doing. In fact, you're not even allowed to speak the name of what we were focusing on the last couple of weeks, which you may see on television and hear on other radio stations. So we are not, and in fact, I'm now in charge of this. If anyone says that word, I get $20. So don't say that word. You know the word I'm talking about.
Yes.
All right. $20 is what it will cost you. Single syllable word beginning with T. Yeah. Don't say that word. We don't say that word anymore in this radio station. New regime, new rules. And you know what? I like it better. I like
trunk.
You know, if you're going to play with fire like that, Kyle, you're going to get burned, all right? And let me tell you why. Because, yeah, you might think you're really clever saying something like that.
No, it's a telephone.
But,
problem.
You know, with bad reception or somebody mishearing or even you slipping up, you're going to find yourself shelling out, two tens there.
Look, I have.
You got the money? Because you're going to need it.
$20.
Uh-huh.
I will. All right, I'll get it out of my wallet later.
All right, well, just be careful.
Because I have to run this.
And let me just tell you, it doesn't apply just to the air. It applies to the entire station facilities.
Anywhere right? in the station
Anywhere facilities. In the facilities of the station. Out in the hallway, fine. As long as it's not heard inside the facilities. But we don't want that word on these airwaves anymore. We do not want that word anymore on these airwaves. In fact, there's that. You see that list over there of the seven dirty words? Which I don't know why we have a big display of seven dirty words you're not supposed to say on the radio. In fact, there are people that have added like variations of those words too, like plurals and things like that. That's nice. Thank you for that. But somebody has written in that
I can't read after 14. It just goes off the page.
Yeah, but somebody has written in, and actually this one would be the eighth word. You can't say that word because you can't. And maybe the FCC isn't saying we can't say that word, but we're saying. And right now in this particular place, WUSB has more authority, so think about that.
They do.
You won't hear that word. And, folks, if you do hear that word, I want you to contact me. If anybody says the T word over the radio, write to us, otw@2600.com, because it's $20 for me right there every time they say it. Actually, am I supposed to give that money to the station? They didn't say that. They didn't make that clear. Okay, whatever. I'm going to be managing $20. I'm not exactly sure what happens to it afterwards.
It'll be in escrow, right?
But the point is, we're trying to keep the dialogue at a certain level, and when words like that are used on the air, the intelligence level just kind of goes down, and we don't want that. So that's why. That's why we have rules like this, folks.
Okay.
All right. We had a fun weekend. We took the cannonball.
Yes.
Oh, boy. What is the cannonball? Well, might you ask that question? The cannonball is the only named train, as far as I know. Actually, there might be another one, but it's the traditional named train that goes out Friday afternoons from Penn Station all the way out to Montauk. And get this, it doesn't make a single stop from Penn Station until West Hampton. That's the equivalent of going well past Port Jefferson and going out east. And in order to get on this train, well, it was kind of difficult because, well, you might know we don't live in Montauk. So, okay, we succeed in taking a train out to Montauk. Then what do? We had to park a car at the train station in Montauk the night before.
For our convenience.
So that there'd be a car there. Unfortunately, it's one of those parking lots that was unrestricted. In fact, there's people that park their cars there and cover them with tarp, and there's a camper there.
I argue we could have stayed till like 5 in the morning and spent the rest of the weekend walking back to Port or Brookhaven
we could
area,
have done that.
North Shore.
Sure.
It would have taken us maybe 48 hours.
I'm sure we'd be enjoying that. But we decided, yes, leave the car there and take the train on Thursday night at about 10 o'clock all the way into the city. And that is not an express train. It's pretty much stops everywhere up until Babylon. And then from Babylon, it doesn't stop at all until it gets to Jamaica, which is kind of cool because it could make all those stops in Nassau County, and it doesn't. So it was really, it was about just over 3 hours, I think, from Montauk to Penn Station going in. So we had a good sense of how long the ride was. So going back out, we had a sense of how much we were skipping by not stopping. Now, the Cannonball is cool because you have to make reservations on it. It's kind of weird the way you do it. You have to fill out a form and email it to them, and then they send you an email back saying they got the form, and then later on they'll tell you if you've been accepted or not. Yeah, you could actually be rejected because they sell out all the time. There's three bar cars. That's what we're trying to get reservations for, in the bar cars. The train is immensely long. I think it's 14 cars long. And I don't know if you have to make a reservation to get on the rest of the train. I think you can just show up for that. But for the bar cars, there's only three of them, and you have to get a seat on that. The whole thing is phenomenally expensive. I mean, the tickets themselves, I think, are like $30-$35 each. And then you got to pay something to be in the bar car. And then you got to pay for drinks on top of that. And we were on this thing. You would think the bar car would look like a bar. It's just one of the double-decker LIRR trains that has a cup holder next to the seat and a guy that comes by and sells you a drink. That's it, really.
In other words, seat drink service, I think, is what you meant to say.
I thought there'd be like singing and maybe a fight or two and just all kinds of rabble rousing
and lederhosing.
I don't know. I just, it's sort of like, you know, in Europe when you take a train,
right?
I thought it'd be something more like that. And instead, I guess I could have gone to the bar. And by the way, the bar is simply a cart that they wheel onto the train and they wheel off the train. That's all it is. And it's everything is in a bottle or a can. They could do better with this. It's a great idea. It's very popular, but they could do so much better.
I think you're onto something. We did have some reservations and some comments. Definitely some. There are areas we think they could improve. I thought maybe draft beer would be a possibility.
How hard is that? Get a keg. You
it's
know,
a lot of packaging, a lot of glass. That's kind of unnecessary. They had, I think, at least like 10 different beers, that's heavy. That's a lot of glass and a lot of like mixers too. So you could do it was a full liquor like license, a full bar car, so you could make your own mixed drinks, but you had to buy the mixers separately. There's a couple little stipulations like that that were a little kind of it's all right, and the drinks were reasonably priced, but it was like, they could have stepped it up a little bit further.
No snacks. They ran out of pretzels away.
They ran out of snacks.
Because we were the third bar car. Apparently, the other two bar cars ate all the pretzels, and we had nothing except for one round of drinks. I thought there'd be like two or three rounds of drinks, but there was really only time for one by the time the guy got to us. I probably could have walked over to the place and gotten more, but it just didn't seem worth it.
I feel like if they attached a bar car that was a real bar car, had some draft beer, real bartender making actual drinks, and like maybe standing room or something, you know, not like not something that's like overly furnished so you can pack a lot of people in, and you know, that would have the atmosphere, maybe a little music.
Why not? I mean,
in the bar car, right?
Sure would have been better than the person who was sitting next to us talking on her phone. Or no, she was talking to the guy next to her. About her phone and about every little detail in her life. I was so happy when he got off the phone. But then she continued talking to nobody in particular. No, he got off the train, not the phone.
The train,
train, and then she continued.
It was just same difference.
Loudmouth people that just, you know, I don't mind lots of people. I mind hearing one person over everybody else and hearing every intimate detail of their lives.
People that have to dominate. They know they're in public. They hear their voice, and they have to dominate. It's like adorning something. It's like dress, some kind of clothing, or a badge of honor. They're going to be loud and seen, just like.
There was an irony here, though, because I think she was talking about how she doesn't give all her information to social media, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
She was saying things that I would normally agree with, but she was saying them in such an annoying way that I couldn't stand it because I was a captive audience to this. I couldn't escape. And she's telling me, yeah, that's what it felt like. She was telling the guy next to her, who was probably counting the minutes till he could get off the train, how, you know, she valued her privacy and how various protections that she undertook to make sure that her name didn't get out there. And meanwhile, I'm hearing all this information and learning all this stuff that I shouldn't be learning. So yeah, it's it's really kind of I don't know, annoying sometimes. But yeah, they could make the bar car actual bar car. I mean, they're going to use the same car for this every week. Why not make it, you know, make it an actual bar car instead of
an event,
just passenger seats like every other car.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon. You see it on Amtrak all the time. Of course, in Europe, you see it all the time. You can get steins of, or not steins, but lots of beer, and it is draft. It's not, you know, these, you know, tons and tons of bottles and packages and cans and stuff. But the scenery was pretty amazing. We really did enjoy getting to drive straight through and see the whole thing. So, you know, a lot of land and agrarian stuff small communities leaving Nassau and Queens, I think we went
Through, we didn't make a single stop in Queens.
You were marmoring
okay,
at the Acela.
You know what? I learned a lot. I'll tell you about that in a second.
No, but
we passed through Queens, we passed through Nassau without making a single stop. We passed Jamaica Station and just, well, we didn't zip through it. We went through it kind of slowly, but we didn't stop. And there were all these commuters there looking at us as we passed by. And our first stop wasn't until out in the Hamptons, which I thought was really, really cool.
Very cool.
As we exited the East River Tunnel, we saw an Acela to the right of our train.
We did.
And I said, okay, the Acela, it's going to the Sunnyside Yards. And I'm like a big authority on this. Yeah, Kyle, the Sunnyside Yards, that's where trains park. You see Amtrak Day, you see New Jersey Transit, all this stuff. Then I see on the Acela train, I see there's all these people. I'm like, wait a minute, these people can't be going to the yard. They're on their phones as commuters. Obviously, they don't want to be going to a train yard.
Right.
So it wasn't until we got home later and I got onto Google Maps and looked at the rail lines.
The actual
that
route.
I realized I'm completely wrong about the way those trains work. What the Acela train does, I always thought the Acela somehow exited north and went up to Boston through the Bronx. What it does instead is it comes down, if it's coming from Boston, it comes down through Connecticut, right? It comes down through the Bronx, then it crosses the Hell's Gate Bridge. That's the bridge we see from the Triborough Bridge occasionally, and you might see an Amtrak train on that bridge, big aqueduct-looking bridge.
A lot of masonry bricks and stuff.
Now, when I saw a train going towards Queens on that bridge, I just assumed it was going north. It's actually going south. It's going from the Bronx into Queens. And then what it does is it turns around and goes through that same East River Tunnel to Penn Station.
Whoa.
That's what it's doing. And I didn't know it was doing that. I didn't know that's the route that Amtrak was using. So for the first time ever, I saw an Acela in Queens that was on its way to Boston. I just didn't know it went through Queens to do that.
That's cool, because at the time we were really confused, because you were certain it was going to the yard, or there's no reason for it to be there.
Uh-huh.
That explains a lot.
And apparently, Acela trains go through Astoria, and if you're in Queens, you'll see an Acela train just going on a different track.
Wow.
It's near, I pointed out this mystery freight track that goes through Queens as well. It uses part of that for a bit of the journey,
mm-hmm.
But there's all kinds of rail lines all throughout the island that are unused or used very rarely.
Another, if anyone's listening out there and you know trains, we also had a question about why the Cannonball runs diesel so soon out of the city.
We noticed that. We noticed there were fumes immediately after it got out of the tunnel on the East River. I thought they'd wait until Babylon when the electric line ends, and then they'd just switch over to diesel, but they seemed to switch immediately.
Yeah, we noticed. We were in the car right behind the engine, so we were seeing little puffs of black as soon as we got pretty much out from underground. And started into Queens there, and it was a bit of a mystery because we thought we'd be electric as long as there was electric.
Well, I just figured you'd go faster when you're electric.
Yeah.
I don't know if diesel can go that fast.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that was kind of cool, I mentioned this train is very, very long.
Mm-hmm.
The train is so long that it doesn't fit at a lot of stations, and what they do, especially out east, is they stop twice. They say, okay, we're in Southampton now. This train's going to make two stops at Southampton. I've never been on a train that stopped twice at the same station. But and even at Montauk, the last stop, they stop once, let everybody off. Then they pull up a bit more and let everybody else off.
It's true. There's like half a dozen stations that are like that. It felt like that, at least.
It was weird. I've never seen anything like that. And I've traveled on a lot of trains.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's saying something. And likewise, I've not seen anything like that. It just seems the stations out there are just a bit small, a bit short, and we're a much more populous world these days.
Yes, very true. But you know, I'm glad we did it. Yeah. Always wanted to do it. And then I found out there's a wine train on the North Fork. I don't know if it has a name. I think it's called the North Fork Wine Train. It goes from Ronkonkoma to Greenport on Fridays, and they have wine.
That sounds fun.
So it's not nearly as long a ride, but...
Well, that's something they do on a lot of Amtrak trains, and I know they have a bunch of those in wine country in California, and definitely in Washington they do that sometimes.
Yes. So that was our little adventure as far as all that goes. What else has been going on? Europa League. I've got an update on Europa League. Our team, Southampton, played on last Thursday. They played against a team called FC, and I'm going to try to pronounce this right, FC, I tried this last week and it didn't work. FC Midtjylland. Yeah, okay, I'm going to say Midtjylland. How would you say Midtjylland? Is that how you'd say it?
Midland.
Okay. They're a team from Denmark. And Southampton is playing them in the first leg of, I believe, the third round of the Europa League, which is called the playoff round. Anyway, we played them last Thursday, 1-1 draw, and we play them again this coming Thursday. And I think we play them in Denmark this time. It was in England the first time. So we had the advantage and we tied. So now we play them again. They add up the scores and whoever wins advances to, I believe, the group stage. So that's what we have to look forward to in the next round of the Europa League. So, that's the update there. All right. I didn't spend very much time on that. I said I wasn't going to. There's a lot of what do you call it? Consternation. Would you say consternation, panicking, people freaking out over the stock market?
The stock market's come up. It started with the devaluing of the Chinese currency, I feel like. I mean, there was a lot of huge economic things that happened in the last couple of weeks, and that was one of them. Yeah, the stock market.
Thing is, over the weekend, everybody knew. Everybody was saying the stock market's going to go way down on Monday. It's going to be a correction. Everybody's talking about that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you're like me and you have like something in mutual funds, there's nothing you can do about it. If you're an actual trader, you can trade on the day that you know things are going to plummet. And that's what makes things plummet, is everybody doing that. But like, if you're like me, you got to wait till the end of the day before, you know, if you want to take your money out, it won't come out until the end of the day when it's already happened.
And God help you if you have to pay taxes on any of it.
Well, here's the thing. When this happens, like for instance, yesterday the stock market went down 1,000 points within 10 minutes of opening. Can you believe that? 1,000? That's never happened before. It rebounded, but it wound up dropping about 600 points. I don't really know what these numbers mean. I just know they correlate to my balance in my mutual funds. It does go down when something like that happens. It goes up when the stock market goes up. It's very loosely based. There's all kinds of technical explanations that could bore the tears out of you.
It's just a sampling of a lot of companies and the average of all those companies. If they're all generally, if the market's growing and things are generally doing well, they'll all sort of rise and your fund will rise. Therefore, the whole thing goes down.
But I don't know what that number means, a Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Yeah, so that's an average of commodities and a certain type of business, but it's
got something to do with inflation, right? Because back in the 80s, that number was way lower, and now it's way
11,000 or something. Now, I remember when we did the stock market game in school, uh-huh. which they actually taught in math classes. It was like around like 10,000, maybe 8,000, and now it's like 16,000. So it's double what it was when I was little.
Which correlates to inflation because the dollar is basically you get half as much now for a dollar as you did that amount of time ago. So I don't think we're doing twice as well or whatever else. I think it correlates to inflation.
Right.
So okay, that number plummeted yesterday. It was going up today, and then it went down again.
Mm.
Yeah, and last week the stock market went down. So the thing is, people panic. People freak out over these things, and that's what causes the problems. I'm not a financial expert. I don't know a lot, but there is one thing I do know, and that is you got to stay calm. You got to just ride it out, and it always comes back. Like, for instance, the 1929 stock market crash. I remember it well. In 1929.
No, you don't. You weren't around.
I feel like I was. In 1929.
Probably no people.
The stock market fell down, right? And really hurt itself. But you know what? In 6 months, those losses were repaired.
Completely.
So they don't tell you that. Okay, so basically, this is what I'm going to do right now.
Okay.
Last week at this time, I was okay, you know? I was okay. And then last week happened, lost a bunch. Monday happened, lost a bunch more. Today happened, lost even more. Okay? So right now, I've got this bell that I bought that you might have heard earlier. And I probably shouldn't have bought it because, well, with the amount of money I've been losing. But I'm gonna ring it. Let me just ring the bell. Did the microphone pick that up? Okay. Now, I'm not going to ring that bell again until I have the money back that I had a week ago today. All right? So you are not going to hear that bell again. And I'm going to come in whenever that happens. And we'll see how long it takes for my money to be restored. Fair enough?
Okay.
All right. And that'll be our little financial lesson and patience, you know?
No, that's brilliant. And it will give people kind of a little reminder of how things work in the background.
Yeah.
That'll be ongoing. It'll be happening. You won't even think, and you'll say, "Ah, I remember. What? How long ago? Does that seem right?" And gosh, wow, I subconsciously understand the markets better now. And
well,
golly,
maybe
what's
I don't
next?
Know. People might get that. They might not. But the thing is, it's going to have to be on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Obviously, the money's not going to come back today.
No.
Damn it! But it's not going to come if it comes back tomorrow, which it could do if the stock market suddenly adds 3,000 points or something. But it's probably not going to happen tomorrow or anytime this week or probably not next week either. The point is the next Tuesday that I have that money back is when I'm going to ring the damn bell again, unless I have to sell the bell to feed myself. We'll see.
All right. Well, we'll look out for that. And everybody out there, be very careful with the markets.
Do you see this article, Kyle? I hid it from you all week so that you wouldn't see it, actually. The next 11 states to legalize marijuana.
Oh, goody.
Yeah. Marijuana prohibition is entering its 78th year. Colorado's marijuana law went into effect at the beginning of last year in the wake of changing attitudes, compared to 1969, when only 12% supported legalizing pot. Today, a majority of Americans support legalizing recreational use of the drugs. Legal to purchase marijuana now in 4 states. Can you name the 4 states, Kyle? Oh, come on. You better be able to do this.
Oh, hell yeah, I can do it. Yeah. Let's see.
Alphabetical order.
Alphabetical order?
All right,
order?
Fine. We'll skip the alphabet for now.
Legally?
You're coming off an injury.
Alaska.
So. Okay, good, good. That is alphabetically the first one.
I know the last two, but there's something else.
What are the last two? Let's just get them out of the
Oregon
way.
And Washington.
Oregon and Washington, okay.
And
I just mentioned it.
Oh, Colorado.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I've never really been to Colorado. I've been there once.
And also the District of Columbia, which is not a state, and they get no representation. But it's still legal there.
True. It's legal there. And it's de facto legal pretty much everywhere else.
Now, prior to the legalization, all of these states had already reduced the penalties for possession and use of small amounts of the drug or introduced policies permitting medical marijuana use. So to identify the states most likely to legalize marijuana next, this organization called 24/7 Wall Street reviewed the 11 states whereby law, residents in possession of small amounts of the drug are not punishable by jail time, and medical marijuana use is permitted. So let's go over these states really quickly.
Okay, I got it, I got it, I got
it. As we're running out of time.
New York, New Jersey, California, Florida, let's see, Arizona,
you know,
New Mexico, Nevada, Utah. No, not Utah. Maybe Utah.
Why don't you give us
and
the
then
first
some
one?
Southern ones, like, give me some Georgia.
I'm way behind you here.
Okay,
Name the first one you just did.
Okay, I think New York. New York's next. Either
New York is next.
I think so because California has immense amounts invested in their medical marijuana program, and they have immense amounts of venture capital trying to get money off of the commercial industry.
New York was one of the first states to decriminalize
commercial
marijuana.
Commercial recreational. Sorry. Go ahead.
New York was one of the first states to decriminalize marijuana, passing a bill back in 1977. However, according to the Marijuana Policy Project, law enforcement agencies have been abusing the public view loophole, which differentiates between where offenders are caught, possessing a small amount of the drug in the privacy of one's home results in a fine, while possession in a public place can result in a misdemeanor. Supporting this claim is New York's extremely high marijuana-related arrest rate, which was the highest in the country in 2013, 577 per 100,000 people, more than double the national rate. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio announced last year that the city would no longer be enforcing that loophole. So, yes, New York is one of the states, based on all that, that is predicted to be the next 11 that will legalize it.
So Vermont, Maine, Rhode Island.
I can't possibly go through
New
all
Jersey.
These. Hang on. Vermont, you say?
Totally. Come on.
Vermont. Okay,
come
hang on. There's many pages
And Massachusetts,
here.
Maybe.
Vermont. Yes, Vermont is listed there as well. According to a RAND research study on marijuana legalization, Vermonters consume between 15 to 25 metric tons of marijuana.
Hell yeah.
Worth between $125 million and $225 million in 2014. More than 19% of state residents, 12 years and over, reported using marijuana in the past year, the third highest share nationwide. Also, according to the Vermont Department of Health, marijuana consumption is more common among 12 to 17-year-olds in Vermont than in any other state in the nation. So, yes, Vermont is predicted to be one of the 11 next. What was your next guess?
Okay.
Educated guess.
Did you already cover Jersey and
just
the New York
and Vermont? Those are the only two we've done.
All right. So I'll go New Jersey.
You'll go New Jersey. Let's see. Even with Chris Christie leading.
That's. I'm not keen. I mean, the local politics might throw me on some of these. Although I do know about Chris Christie.
New Jersey was not found in this list, I'm afraid.
Wow.
I'm sorry to hear.
Well, didn't they already start something with medical marijuana recently?
Well, they may have.
They started a program for that.
But I think there's enough political opposition to prevent anything from significantly from happening.
Okay, so Illinois?
Illinois. Looking up Illinois here.
Big city. Big city. They got gun problems. They need
to
chill out.
Not there.
Man. All right. California. Where's California?
California. It's okay, you might have lucked out there.
Yeah, right. Come on.
Yes, California. Okay. California was in the vanguard of state marijuana reforms in the 1970s, an early adopter of decriminalization. In 1996, the state passed the Compassionate Use Act, which permitted physician-recommended marijuana use for medical treatment. In 2010, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed legislation that reclassified the crime of marijuana possession from a misdemeanor to an infraction. Despite the state's historically progressive stance, marijuana has yet to be legalized. In 2010, a motion to legalize failed by a slim margin. But, of course, it is a different world now, so California is definitely on the list of 11.
Okay, Hawaii.
Hawaii. What a nice guess that is. Hang on. I wish they had
printed
out this.
A lot of weed in Hawaii.
Yes, but unfortunately they are not on the list. I'm sorry.
All right. Well,
good guess, though. Very good guess.
Mahalo.
Yeah. We're going to speed this up a little bit. So any other states?
Oh, yeah, Nevada.
Nevada. Yes, Nevada is on the list. According to the Marijuana Policy Project, Nevada is one of 20 states to decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana, though no one found in possession of under an ounce of the drug can face incarceration of felony charges. Nevada's penalties for possession are among the harshest of all the states that have decriminalized. Unlike some states that have decriminalized the small amounts of the drug, like Massachusetts and California, first-time offenders in Nevada can still be charged with a misdemeanor and be compelled to undergo mandatory drug treatments.
Yeah, but that'll ruin your life for a while.
Despite that, Nevada is on the list.
All right.
It's one of the 11 states.
You want me to keep going?
You can keep going until you get one wrong. How about that?
Until I get one wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Think carefully. But not so long that we go into Finn's show.
Idaho.
Okay, I think we're probably going to eliminate you right now. Idaho is not on that list. Okay, so here's the states that are remaining. Yeah. Massachusetts.
I said that early on, but
switched
but
you didn't guess it. Minnesota. Connecticut.
Yeah.
Maryland. Rhode Island. Maine. And Delaware.
Maine, I could have told you.
No, a lot of them are on the East Coast, which I'm excited by.
A lot of New England, a lot of this. I mean, as soon as, the East Coast is definitely something to watch. And if you care about that out here, get involved and make it happen.
And speaking of Rhode Island, this is a fact that you told me about and that I learned about reading about the Acela. In Kingston, Rhode Island, apparently Acela trains go by at 150 miles an hour.
Yeah, there's a really, really cool video online about that.
I want to see that.
Yes, it's the only place you can see the Acela at top speed. And did you read the speeds? It really does cook through there.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's through a station, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it does not stop, and it goes through at, I kid you not, 180 miles an hour.
Is it in? No, it's 150 miles an hour, I think. Well, we'll find out.
It could be kilometers.
We're going up there.
We'll do the research. We'll bring a radar gun.
Because the cannonball does not go that fast.
No, it crawls.
No. I wish trains went faster here. But I don't know if the one in Kingston, Rhode Island, if they even have an express track. It might go right past a platform at that speed.
Well, you know what, E? We're going to keep working on that, and I will promise to do a follow-up. I know we had someone on the air a while ago about trains in this country, and maybe we should do a little bit of revisit that and find out where we're at with some of the legislation we were hearing about, because it's got to happen. I mean, yeah. We need it. The timing is right, and those kinds of jobs. If we can get some real weight behind that stuff, it would be great because we could use it. The benefits totally outweigh the logistics and the work. And gosh, I mean, we've got more and more people and getting mm-hmm. around, especially in this part of the country. It's the system's there. The entities are there that run the system. I'm always impressed, even, you know, like Long Island Railroad, all this stuff we see. It really is well done and could be so much more. So let's
I got to say, I'm very impressed by what we saw this last weekend with the LIRR going all the way out to Montauk. And I realize how big that network is. And it really is well coordinated. And there's all kinds of different things going on I had no idea about.
And you get the sense that it matters.
Uh-huh.
You know, those people out there at the end of this island, they care that that train comes.
Absolutely.
It brings thousands of people to pay.
Well, they might not like that so much. Well, some of the people they don't, but
it
yes.
It brings an economic benefit mm-hmm. to their community. I mean, of course, if you don't like people in your community, maybe that's not so good for you. But you get what I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm trying to be altruistic and positive.
Well, trains do link communities together.
It brings people together, yeah.
And this is I wish they would link them up more. Like, for instance, from here at Stony Brook, for you to get to Montauk by train, you got to go west until at least Hicksville and then double back.
You were tell me this is
and insane. It would be, you know, trains used to go out to Rocky Point on the North Shore. People don't know that, but
really?
There used to be stations out there, and it's fantasy, of course, but you know, I saw a turnoff at Spionk on the South Shore,
yeah,
and that could easily connect, well, not easily, but it could connect to Riverhead or something like that, and you could have a nice little loop there. You could expand. They want to put a third track on the main line. They want to do a second track to Ronkonkoma. They want to electrify out to Port Jefferson. There's all kinds of things they can do. There's East Side Access to Grand Central Parkway and
concrete side
Parkway.
Ties.
Grand Central Station, not Parkway.
Concrete ties.
Concrete ties make the ride smoother.
And the Port Jefferson Bridge.
Yeah, and you know, there was all kinds of rumors of increasing the speed and just having a better ride overall.
Yeah, and it really is. It's about the infrastructure that you put down, the kinds mm-hmm. of fibers, the kinds of track and railways, the kinds of motorways and technology controlling it, and that dictates the kind of travel and the systems that you're gonna depend on really do matter, and we need to fight for that as far as civil engineering goes.
You know, during this show, we've said a lot of positive things. We've said a lot of hopeful things. Healthcare might actually be improving. We're getting good treatment. Trains actually might be improving in this country. I got to stop now because I can't do this optimistic stuff. I'm glad we're not doing the T word anymore. I'm happy that's gone. I'm happy I'll be getting $20 every time someone says it.
Planes are going to run on biofuels pretty soon.
And there's that.
I heard about that one time.
And Finn is at the door and we got to go. OTW@2600.com is our email address.
Hey, thanks for listening, everyone. It's great to have you.
Hey kids, it's Finn, Finn's Revolution, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. The Long Island Roller Rebels roller derby team will be here in just a few minutes, giving away tickets for this Saturday's bout over in Bethpage for the Long Island Roller Rebels. And momentarily, we're going to give away some tickets to TAL National tomorrow night in the city of New York. Stay tuned. This is TAL National. I'm giving away some tickets for them right now, tomorrow night in Manhattan. Give me a call right now, 631-632-6901. It's an 8 o'clock show. Give me a call. If you like it, check it out. Really, really cool band, TAL National.
Fanta, la que la acelera, así es el lo llega.
Yeah, that's right. Tal National playing tomorrow evening at, I believe, at Baby Castles in Lower Manhattan. If you would like some tickets to see Tal Nationals tomorrow night, super grooving, great, great, great Afro band, great evening for music, 8 p.m. show, give me a call right now, 631-632-6901. But right now, we're also lucky enough to have a couple of Long Island Roller Rebels in the room, and we have in the house Murderbus and Karma Collision. And the Roller Rebels, for those of you who do not know, and those of you who are never listen to the show because I talk about derby all the time, are roller derby girls and a great roller derby team. Ladies, how are we?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Yes, oh, of course. As always, and it's good to have you back. And you guys are part of the Long Island Roller Rebels. Okay, and you have about this Saturday night, right?
Yes, Saturday. Yes, this Saturday. Doors open at 7, and it starts at 8 o'clock. We will be playing against Pair O' Dice.
Pair O' Dice.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Jersey?
So, and this happens at a place called Safe Skate America, right?
Yes.
Which is on Sweet Hollow Road in Old Bethpage.
Yes, it is.
And a great place to see stuff. And the event itself is always spectacular. And those of you who haven't been to roller derby before, it's this massive, cool.